North. It's a gorgeous day up here, too. What a week it has been for KSCO. And before we get into the program, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for the wonderful job that you did anchoring the service, the special coverage that we provided of the memorial for the two slain officers. That was on Thursday. Couldn't have been more proud of the radio station. We've gotten so many accolades and of appreciation in the form of emails, phones, letters, messages, anything you can think of. And you guys just did a wonderful job with you in the studio and Michael and Billy and Rosie over the hill at the HP Pavilion. We really shined, and it's because of you guys. So I want to thank you very much.
I totally agree with you, Michael.
Hey, Ma, there you are.
Sure.
Yeah, that's good. It's a K day at the radio station. I'm at KSCO North. Mom is at KSCO along with the pilot in command, Rick O'Shea. And if you want to come on down and get a copy, signed copy of Kay's book with a nice inscription, or you want to get some gifts for people, this is the perfect time to do it. The address is 2300 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz, and you can sit down. It's always sort of a nice little respite, a nice little way to connect even more with your favorite radio station. And Ma, I guess you're going to be with us for the first 20 minutes or half hour, because you've got some things you want to bring up.
I do, because it's very timely. A gentleman by the name of Kelly Tuttle sent this information. And it's very timely.
Let's start that. Let's get into the program officially, because
okay.
Nothing counts until we do this.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time. We've got tunes. We've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSVO Radio.
Hey, good morning, Monterey Bay, Silicon Valley, and the world at large. It's MZ welcoming you to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special. We're going to be on the air right up until 12 noon. It's an audience participation free-form program today. Going to be open mic. You're going to sort of decide the topics. And you can call us at 479-1080 right up until noon time. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Hello?
Okay.
What happened to the music? Anyhow, the music just stopped, so we'll worry about that later. So, Ma, you're there, I'm there, and Rick is there, and set us up for what you're going to talk about. It has something to do with gun control, right?
Yes, it has something to do with gun control. I did mention that we received this from Kelly Tuttle, and thank you very much, Kelly, because this is a very timely subject for our government and for we the people. The title he put here was A Little Government Gun Control History.
Now, did he pass this along? Was it written by somebody else?
I have no idea. It came to the station. It came in your mail, and you haven't been here. So I opened it yesterday,
and I was
glad to see this. And this is information from many countries and their feelings about gun control. So let me pick the ones that I think are very relevant. Let's start. In 1929, the Soviet Union established gun control. From 1929 to 1953, about 20 million dissidents, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. And then in 1911, Turkey established gun control. From 1915 to 1917, 1.5 million Americans unable, Armenians unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. Germany established gun control in 1938. I was a child then, and I vividly remember it. And from 1939 to 1945, a total of 13 million Jews and others who were unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. Now, China established gun control in 1935. From 1948 to 1952, 20 million political people who were complaining, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Excuse me, please.
Sounds like you're going to get coughing.
Yeah, but...
And there is a cough button there that Rick can show you where to push.
Rick had to go out of the room.
Oh, okay.
We're on our own. I will skip... I will skip... Don't laugh.
Okay. So you don't laugh either.
Guatemala, Uganda, Cambodia, they all lost people because of gun control. This particular one is interesting. Switzerland issued every household a gun. Switzerland government then trained every adult they issued a gun to. Switzerland has the lowest gun-related crime rate of any civilized country in the world. That really says something, doesn't it?
It sure does.
It's a no-brainer.
So you didn't need it. You didn't need this to receive this information.
No,
it just didn't change your mind. It just sort of reinforced what you always believed. Am I right?
Yes, and it's a no-brainer. Don't let our government waste millions of our tax dollars in an effort to make all law-abiding citizens an easy target.
Okay. Well, if anybody wants to comment on that, I mean, we've been talking about guns and control for a long, long time. It's sort of at nauseam, but I know that was important for you because you sort of saw a whole new perspective that you hadn't thought of, right? So.
Well, I did think about it, but I'm glad to read it to people who might think gun control is a good idea, but
it's
not.
Do you think there are many people who listen to KSCO who think gun control is a good idea? After all, we have this strictly enforced rule that only intelligent people are permitted to listen to KSCO, Ma.
Yes, I don't know how many people would want gun control. It's clearly not a good idea. That's all I have to say. There are many other countries.
Not only will it not work, you talk about it being expensive, but not only will it not work, but it'll destroy us and make us, you know, go the way of you know, other countries that haven't been able to defend themselves.
Oh, right.
And I don't understand why there's anybody out there.
Well, if there is, I wish that person would call in.
Well, there's a caller right now that's being screened. And by the way, when I say screened, we don't normally, you know, we don't censor people who call. I mean, we want to find out who they are, where they're calling from, what they want to talk about, so that you know, we can decide whether it fits with the conversation. And obviously, we're talking a little bit about gun control right now. Who knows where the conversation will lead later on. But, 479-1080 in area 831 is the number to call if you want to participate. It doesn't matter where you are in planet Earth. If you're outside of the United States, you might have to dial 01, you know, before you dial, 831-479-1080. But, we would like to hear from you. And here comes one of our favorite callers, be number one. That'll be Annalise in Soquel. Hey, Annalise, you're on the air.
Hi, Annalise.
I don't hear any Annalise, so maybe Annalise needs to be
potted. That's Colonel Terry.
Okay. Oh, it's Colonel Terry?
Yes. But I'll defer to Annalise going first.
Well, but it says Annalise is on the screen. So are you sure you're not Annalise? Just trying to be an imposter for...
I've never had the privilege of meeting the lady. It sounds like it would be fun.
All right. Well, here. Let's just go ahead and put you on hold. The line two says that Annalise is there. Now, are you the real Annalise? Will the real Annalise please speak up?
Yes, I am. But I don't know if the other fellow wasn't ahead of me, and maybe you want to take his call. I'll hold on the line. How's that?
Oh, okay. All righty. Thank you. Since he did call first, but he was mislabeled. But I don't think he should be penalized for that. Hey, Colonel Terry.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning, dear Kay.
Hi.
I frequently agree with you. Not always, but most frequently. And on the issue of immigration, I am in complete agreement with your well-written essays and statements on that. Jumping to gun issues, I'm sympathetic to the parents of the children murdered by the availability of automatic weapons and rapid-fire, high-volume clips with 30 bullets without changing them. And I think you'd agree with me, Kay, that some reasonable regulation, not comprehensive confiscation and gun control to be confiscation like the Nazis or the communists, putting people in the gulag, but frankly, some reasonable degree of regulation.
That means get rid of certain kinds of guns. Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. And there's no legitimate need for hunting or even self-defense for 30-round or 15-round clips and rapid capable of firing weapons to be available to be taken or stolen or used by lunatics like those that killed and murdered the 20 children in Connecticut and so forth.
Totally
agree.
Absolutely.
Some balance certainly be found.
So, yeah. Ma, I think I hear you saying you are in favor of some form of gun control then, huh?
Regulation. Let's call it gun regulation.
Yeah, let's call it that.
Okay,
here's my comment.
Michael, wouldn't you agree with this gentleman?
No.
You wouldn't?
You don't?
No, I think...
Free?
No, I don't. No, I don't think. I think everything should be free, and I think a well armed society is a very polite society. No, I don't agree with either of you. Sorry.
But Michael, there are lots of crazy people.
They're crazy people are going to get their hands on things. Crazy people don't obey laws, Ma. They're going to get what they're going to get, whether there's a stupid, expensive to enforce law or not.
I don't agree.
Okay, well, good. We can agree to disagree on that.
Right.
And Terry and I agree to disagree on that too.
Well, we're going to get to a point. My last comment is, I think the movement is here, and Kate probably agrees with me. There's going to be both political parties ultimately having to acknowledge the public consensus, the mass weight of American public opinion wanting removal of the most dangerous weapons from availability.
You're probably right about that, but I very much disagree with that.
Let's hear what Annalise has to say.
Okay, thank you, Terry. You take care.
Thanks, Terry.
There goes Colonel Terry. Here comes Annalise. Hi, Annalise, you're on.
Hello. Hello, MC, and hello, Kay.
Hi.
Thank you. I appreciate being able to talk with you, Kay, because I always know that you are, without doubt, one of the most diplomatically eloquent people I know that acts as a radio host. There are a number of them, as in, Michael Field, Friedman. He is just lovely to talk to because Charlie is, whether he agrees or disagrees, he comes with facts and he handles his public so diplomatically. It's really amazing to listen to how he handles difficult calls. I don't call to be difficult.
No.
I will say, well, I don't always agree with Colonel Terry. That's fine because everyone is entitled to their opinion. But in this, I very much agree with him that some regulation of these high-power automatic weapons, there is no good reason in terms of talking about it in a public that wants to go hunting, that's fine, but it's not going to be, by the way, helpful if we have a government that can come in and mow people down simply by drones if they wanted to. You think they're going to come and individually haul you out of your house? if it's a major community issue, you're not going to be able to save yourself with a 100 magazine repeating rifle. It's not going to save you. They have equipment, they have armament, they have ammunition much stronger than you can do. And yes, I think I really underscore in this case what Colonel Terry was saying. In addition to that, I wanted to say that as a person who is, I'm French-Swiss, that's my nationality, I own property in Switzerland as well as in the United States, but, and I have an American citizenship. The reason why the Swiss had, especially at that time in 1945, every family had a gun. There was a reason why every household had a gun. Every man at that time was obliged, whether they liked it or not, to be in conscription if he was over 18. And they had to stay that way in conscription to their government as a soldier until at least 35. That wasn't something they signed up for. It was automatic if you were a Swiss citizen, and that accounted for why every family had a gun. It was not because they were afraid of their government. It had nothing to do with it. Switzerland is a very small country. They needed to have a way to defend themselves in case other countries around them might overwhelm them. They were considered a neutral country in many international issues because they just didn't get involved in many of the wars. They could have become a swinging door when, in 1945, when the Germans swept through much of Europe, Switzerland could have been easily a swinging door country through which they would go to all points of Europe. It's kind of a centrally located country. They did not get involved with the war directly. They remained a neutral country. But that is the reason why they held a gun in every family. It was not because they were afraid of each other or afraid of their government. That should be clear.
Well, that was very clear. Well said.
Well, thank you for making it clear. But what do you think about? Are you saying that if the reason is fear of the government, that it's not legitimate?
I don't think that you're going to save yourself, MZ, if I'm addressing you directly, by having high-powered rifles. And I don't think it makes citizens more...
I'm not going to have any high-powered rifles, but the point
not,
is...
Okay,
the point is, nobody is not going to have high-powered rifles to abide by a law that says you can't have a high-powered rifle if they're a crook to begin with. And that's what people don't seem to understand. You know.
I do seem to understand it, and when it is said, it doesn't help me to shout. You can just speak in a regular tone. I'm right on the phone. I can hear me quite clearly. But in terms of if you're saving yourself because you have rifles, is pretty fallacious. You think the government doesn't have guns that are much stronger and can wipe out your whole house if they wanted to. No problem at all. You think you're going to get out there with an AK repeating rifle and knock off the government, and they're going to stand there like wooden soldiers waiting for you to individually knock them off.
I don't believe in giving an easy path to the camel to get his nose under the tent. And that's what I believe. There are plenty of laws regarding firearms on the books already. And, you know, it's enough already.
What about just regulation?
What about regulation?
That's where I agree with your mother. In fact, there's not a point on this that I find I'm in disagreement with Kay, because I think there should be some gun regulation, not that people can't get guns if they want them, but there should be some regulation. And yes,
right,
as Colonel Terry was saying, you've got a lot of people that can break and enter and take your guns out of your house. They use your guns. You may be signed up and a registered gun owner, but your guns are stolen. They're used by a nut. You know what? The damage is the same.
All right, Annalise, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
To the Saturday special. We have Rebecca Costa. Hi, Rebecca Costa.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, how you doing, MZ?
Good.
Hi, Kay. How you doing?
Good. I'm happy to hear your voice.
All right. Now, listen, I asked Rebecca to call in because some weeks ago, weeks before the tragic events of a week ago, this coming Tuesday, when the two police officers were murdered in cold blood here in Santa Cruz. Rebecca had written an op-ed piece that was picked up, that was published in the USA Today. And I don't know whether it was, I'm sure it was mentioned in one or two of the talk shows, but I don't think we've had an opportunity to sit down and talk with Rebecca about that. And by the way, Kevin in Watsonville, Dan in Santa Clara, Ron in Carmel, Rory in Watsonville, and Bill in Salinas, stay on because we are going to, we're going to get to you here. But I asked Rebecca to call in as soon as she could during this program. She's done that, and out of courtesy to her, I want to spend a little time discussing her thoughts that she put forth in this amazingly insightful and acclaimed op-ed piece.
Maybe we can hear it if it's not too long.
Well, Rebecca can pretty much encapsulate it. You're a thinker, Rebecca, and you thought that there's just a sudden proliferation of mass shootings in this country, and you've thought about that, and you come up with something really interesting that makes these times different from other times in the past, and basically it has everything to do with people who commit these shootings suddenly don't feel like they want to live anymore, and they don't care if they die, right?
That's right. Look, I think the current debate over the Second Amendment and assault rifles is the biggest red herring and biggest ruse I've ever heard. This is not causal. That's just a symptom, and here we go again, quashing a symptom. We have a different kind of killer on our hands, one that is an aberration in nature. Now, what I need everybody to do is to think about the fact that, John Wilkes Booth, when you really think about John Wilkes Booth, he didn't shoot up the Ford Theater after he shot Lincoln. He, at least at the very minimum, folks, killers such as, let's just take the worst of the worst, John Wayne Gacy, Charles Manson, Jeffrey Dahmer, at the very minimum, their instinct to conceal their crime and to get away with it was operational. Because the strongest instinct in nature, the one we were born with, is the drive to survive. And what has happened in every single case, long before someone went looking for a weapon, is that they lost their will to live. And this is not a normal condition in biology. We have the largest number of people ever in human history on antidepressants. People are losing their instinct to survive, to stay alive. And let me tell you, there's going to be repercussions to that. Because once you decide you don't care if you live or die, picking up a weapon and annihilating a bunch of innocent people has no consequence to it. You're not worried about being arrested, caught. You're not worried about going to jail, facing the families of those who you have killed. There is no consequence after death. Dead is dead. And what we have now I don't know if people know this, that antidepressants are now the most prescribed drugs in the United States. They've climbed 400% between 88 and 94 and through 2005 and 08. And the biggest jump is amongst preschoolers and adolescents. Now, if that isn't a warning as to what is to come, I don't know what is.
What can we do about it? Rebecca,
we have got to deal with the fact that we have a species-wide issue, and that the species is losing its desire to survive.
So
we've never encountered this. It is so unnatural in the living world to encounter a species that is self-destructing. And anybody who tries to politicize this and make this all about the Second Amendment and about guns is off their rocker. Let me just say that.
What shall we do about it, Rebecca?
Guns. Because if you take guns away, people look for poisons. They fashion bombs out of fertilizers. They turn airplanes into bombs. Look, they will always find something to take out other people with. So, you know, what we have to do is we have to go to the source of the problem, and the source of the problem is mental illness.
Yes. Yes.
Mental illness is the problem. And these people, by the way, signal their mental illness way before they pick up a gun. We have got to catch the problem earlier than when they get a weapon. Getting a weapon is way too late. That's like trying to solve the financial crisis when we're in a fiscal cliff. You know, it's too late. We get on these problems way too late. Let's go to the cause.
How do we identify the cause, Rebecca?
Well, I'll tell you right now, we get preschoolers and adolescents off of antidepressants right now.
Oh, my God.
When you
put children on an antidepressant, you are sentencing them to be on an antidepressant the rest of their life. You are not teaching them coping skills on how to deal with disappointment, anger, how to control their own emotions. We have handed that over to the pharmaceutical companies. We don't think it's our responsibility to teach self-control anymore. We'd rather put kids on drugs because it's easier. And it takes the burden off of every walking and living adult.
So you're telling parents to not give their children antidepressant drugs, right?
You bet. I'm going on record and saying when you put your child on an antidepressant and you don't give them any other tools, any other coping mechanisms, you are sentencing them to be an adult on antidepressants. And eventually, every doctor listening to this program knows this, those antidepressants stop working. That's the ugly truth.
Well, Rebecca,
it's a temporary mitigation. And if you put your children on antidepressants, you better have a constructive program for how to give them tools to cope with that depression.
Okay, Rebecca, if you had a child who was depressed, and you had the wisdom to understand that giving antidepressants to him would not be good, what would you do for your child?
I would exhaust every other practical solution that know of right now. One, I'd examine their diet. I would examine if there was any physiological reason my child was depressed. Number two, I'd give up a lot of things to spend more time with my child. You don't need three cars. You don't need a bigger house. Your child is not helped by more money and more things. Your child is helped by time you spend with your child. Right now, the latest statistic is the average parent, two-parent families, spend less than 17 minutes a day with their children. You don't think there's going to be a repercussion to that child? You don't think children are going to feel disconnected and depressed?
Yeah.
17 minutes a day. What kind of excuse could we possibly have for that?
You're right.
I want to hear from parents who think that's okay. I don't think there's a single set of parents that think that's all right.
Well, let's see if Rory, whom I know is a parent, and he's been on hold here. Let's see what Rory has to say about that. Rory, welcome to KSCO. You're on the air with Rebecca and KNMZ.
Hi, Rory.
Hi, Kay. Good to hear your voice, and thank you for taking my call. And I couldn't agree more with Rebecca on this. And currently,
yeah,
right
speak
now,
up if you can, please, Rory. I'm having a hard time
currently
hearing.
Right now, my son's on a team. And one of the kids,
now I can barely hear you. You're getting worse, not better.
All right, let me walk a different direction.
Rick, can you pot him up? Because if I can't
is
hear
that
him,
any
I
better?
No, not really. But go ahead. I'll just shut up.
Okay. Anyway, I'll try to talk loudly. Currently, my son's on a team, a sports team, and one of the kids is on a Ritalin type drug. 10, 11 year old kid. And
why do you allow it?
No, it's not my kid.
Oh.
It's somebody else's kid. No, I would never do that. Okay. I agree with Rebecca
100%. Okay, now I hear you. Okay.
Yeah, there's no reason. You have to, like she said, you have to exhaust every other option. And I think a lot of it has to do with, like she said, time spent with children, teaching them adult to child teaching on how to cope with disappointment, how to deal with anger, how to learn to be selfless, you know, diet, exercise, get them off the couch and off the video games. I mean, this is all critical. I mean, Michael, when you and I were kids, you're about 10 years older than me, we were outside. We were running. I mean, I don't know about you, right? Most kids were outside riding bikes, playing games, climbing trees, getting in trouble. I mean, we weren't sitting around getting fat. And so, no, I couldn't agree more. That is a big part of the problem. And then, like Rebecca says, there's plenty of evidence that, like any drug, you become desensitized to it, and they switch medications, they up the dose, and then if you cold turkey, many of those are psychotropic drugs, and you don't come off of them easy.
Oh.
And you can have episodes. We all know. We've talked about it.
Wait a second. You know, I thought that Rebecca was on with us. Are you on with us, Rebecca?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, okay, there you are. Good.
I just want to add one thing here, a fact that, you know, I'm all about facts, not mythology. And there's plenty you can do to get kids back on track. And Rory is absolutely right. When you take kids out into nature, you just take them for a walk in the park. You know, there's so much inspiring about the natural world. It gets kids excited. Take them down and spend some time with them exploring tide pools. You know, take them on a hike out, you know, anywhere, just anywhere where there's nature. Help them build a tree fort, anything. We've got a situation where people might not realize this, but the number of suicides on the planet, and I'm not just talking about the United States, has risen over 60% in the last four decades. Now, you want to talk about an epidemic? As a biologist, I am sounding the alarm to every person who is a biologist, who is a psychologist, who is a sociologist, who is a parent, that a 60% rise in suicide is all the evidence we need to know that something has gone terribly wrong with the species. And this is not going to be in my world. I don't want to hear about the politics of the Second Amendment. When you're not going to go to cause, you can't cure a disease.
Rebecca, let me
treating symptoms.
Rebecca, can I add something here?
Yes.
I know you're an evolutionary biologist, and that's fine. And I have a scientific background, but I believe I have more of a spiritual approach to this. I believe that decades of telling children that they're just an evolutionary hierarchical being, and that they're not a special creation made in the image and likeness of God, and that they are owed respect because of that, and their fellow man is due respect because of that, and thou shalt not murder is one of the commandments. I think it's been lost, and so kids grow up, and they're completely materialistic. In their upbringing, they're not going to church or synagogue. They're not getting any feedback from a different point of view, and they just think they're a higher created, create my own reality creature. And so, if I can get away with it, well, then it's fine. You know, the ends justify the means.
First of all, I'm a really spiritual person. So, you know, a lot of people think if you're an evolutionary biologist that you're not religious, you don't believe in God, and it's really not true. Actually, the vast majority of evolutionary biologists are you know, highly religious, and because the more you learn about how special the human organism is, the more you realize that there's a reason we're at the top of the food chain. And that reason cannot be explained by biology alone. Humankind is a miracle. It's a miracle. But it's not just a spiritual miracle. It's also an evolutionary and scientific miracle. They're the same from that standpoint. We are so unique and so blessed and so amazing in every way. And instead of honoring that place in biology, instead of honoring the fact that out of billions of life forms on the planet, we are at the top of that pyramid, you're absolutely right. We don't honor that. What we do is we appeal to the lowest instincts, the lowest instruments of our genetic inheritance, things like our desire to hoard, greed, compete. Those are things that other animals, that we share with other animals, but we are so much more than that. And yet, we cater to those lower instincts instead of the higher instruments of our genetic inheritance. And as you point out, those are our spirituality, our compassion for our fellow man, our ability to think logically and use reason to preempt long-term danger. Those are the gifts that we were given, and we have squandered those.
Amen. And then the last thing I'll say before I go, because the reason I called in, as bad as some of these recent mass shootings have been in our country, the numbers are infinitesimally small when compared to the 100 million people that lost their lives due to their own government turning on them in the 20th century. And that's why we have the Second Amendment. And no, we don't have the same weaponry that a military has to turn on, but we got numbers, and that's significant. So I'm with you, Michael. We need to keep a healthy respect for the Second Amendment and the rights of citizens to bear arms, and our government leaders need to remember that. When we got the TSA buying, or no, the DHS buying, what, 1.6 billion rounds of hollow points?
Yeah.
Ammunition in the last 12
months. Well, it'd be interesting to put that out for people to call in. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there in KSCO land who think I'm a little extreme and that you're a little extreme. But
I'll let you go.
Yeah, but thank you so much. Thank you, Rory, and thank you, Rebecca. But you're gonna stay with us for. I hope you'll stay with us here because there's a lot of people who want to talk. I'm sure, but I want to put this out. Do you think I'm too extreme when I say no? I don't want to change anything at all. I don't think.
You mean, Michael, that you approve of guns that can keep. Bulleting a lot.
Yeah, keep bulleting.
Why?
A lot. Yes, I do. I just
Why?
Do because I don't. I think once you give the government, it's the camel the nose under the tent type thing. That's what I think is happening here. And if people think that I'm too extreme, talk to me. 479-1080.
Michael, can I just weigh in on this and
sure.
give you an example that's in
sure.
favor of your position?
Sure.
I think the greatest example you have are the riots in L.A. after the Rodney King verdict was given. Right? You had a situation there where you have an example of what happens when the citizenry decides that it's going to go into pure anarchy and chaos. And in that situation where there were a lot of store owners who just became overwhelmed. The police couldn't handle it. The military didn't get in there quick enough to arrest the situation. And everyone remembers the pictures of these Korean store owners who were standing on the roofs of their stores with guns. And their stores weren't broken into.
Right. So it sounds like you're with me. Sounds like you're with me, Rebecca.
They didn't have automatic assault weapons, and they didn't have drones.
Oh, so you're not with me. Help me out here. Are you with me, or are you not with me on this one?
They just had handguns, but that was enough to deter their stores from being taken over.
Okay.
So there are two points I would make here. The earlier caller that said, look, even if everybody just has a handgun, it's the numbers that can outweigh the government.
Mm-hmm.
The government will never have more military and more police officers than citizens in the world. So if all citizens even have a handgun, even if they have a knife, even if they, look at the Palestinians. They have rocks, right? And they're still able to wage resistance. So I'm saying that I don't really think it's tied to weapons so much as it is to numbers of citizens and people. The government cannot take control over its citizenry when they're so far outnumbered. Even technology won't make up that gap.
All right. So how does reduce that all? What you say makes perfect sense. And I know you sort of look above and look at the big picture more than the rest of us.
Yeah, I look at the big picture. The difference between a handgun and an assault weapon isn't going to make any difference at all.
So it doesn't matter whether it's my way and Rory's way or Annalisa's way and my mom's way. It doesn't really matter, is what you're saying.
Because the gating difference is going to be the number of citizens versus law enforcement and military. And they would quickly be overwhelmed even if we only had rocks.
All right. Well, I'm going to put you down as in my camp then for whatever reason. That's what I'm going to do. All right.
I don't care about the guns because
right.
I don't think the guns are the problem.
But I'm going to put you down as in my camp anyhow. So Let's see. Next caller will be Dan in Santa Clara. Dan, welcome to KSCO, the Saturday special with Rebecca Acosta, MZ, and K.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I want to say, first of all, Rebecca is a freaking genius. Everything that she says, you know, for the most part, well, 99% of what she says I fully agree with, and she is completely right about this issue. It's not a gun issue. It's a mental health issue. You know, the argument that because the government has a lot of power as an argument against the citizens being armed is absolutely ridiculous. You know, do we really want to give up that little bit of power that we have to them so that they have even more power? It just doesn't make sense.
Sounds like you're in my
camp
too, Dan. Am I right?
Absolutely. And one other thing I definitely want to bring some clarity to here, because I think that, you know, I'm hearing a lot of buzzwords like assault weapon and automatic weapon. As somebody who owns multiple AR-15s and AK-47s and various types of firearms, I can tell you this debate is not about automatic weapons. Automatic weapons have been, pretty much illegal since the 1930s. It's very difficult to obtain an automatic weapon, like a machine gun. It costs just to buy the firearm, because they've been banned for so long in this country as far as manufacturing or importation. Just to buy the firearm, it could be $50,000 to $100,000 just for the firearm itself, and then there's a number of taxes and fees that go along with that, and extensive background checks that go along with owning those types of weapons. So really, only very rich people can even afford those, and those people go through, like I said, extensive vetting and background checks before they're even allowed to possess those firearms. What we're talking about here are semi-automatic rifles. Pretty much all guns these days are semi-automatic. Guns have been semi-automatic since the late 1800s. These guns have existed in various forms. A semi-automatic weapon, what that means is there is one bullet that comes out of that barrel for every time the trigger is pulled. It's not a machine gun. It's not a fully automatic weapon where you hold the trigger and bullets spray out. We're talking about something, you pull the trigger, one round comes out.
So, I know, thank you for clarifying that.
No problem.
But suppose it was something where you just hold, you pull the trigger and hold it, and the bullets spray out.
Yeah.
Suppose it was. Would you go on record as saying that there should be laws against, normal people like you and me, even with extensive background checks?
Well, here's the thing. We're talking about whether we need more gun control. We already have tons of gun control in this country.
That's what I say, too.
Guns are the most heavily regulated thing that you can buy or transfer in this. I mean, it's very heavily regulated. We don't need more regulation. I think that, automatic weapons, sure, I think certain people should be able to obtain them. That's not really the debate, though, so I'm hesitant to take it there, because that's not what we're talking about, and I don't want people to get confused and think that people that are pro-gun and anti-gun control are advocating that everybody's allowed to have, fully automatic weapons, because for the most part, we're not.
I wouldn't have it either. I wouldn't have one. I don't want to spend that kind of money, for one thing, and the other thing is I don't need it. But I'm not going to have the government tell me flatly that, I just because I'm one of their subjects that I can't have it.
Well, for the most part,
I don't go along with that. So.
Yeah, for the most part, regular people can't afford to spray bullets. Ammunition is very expensive, especially recently. So we're not really advocating that. And the other thing is, the AR-15 is probably the most common rifle in the United States. These are, if you go to a shooting range here, even in the Bay Area, you will see that the majority of firearms there are AR-15 pattern rifles. And they're very common, and there are millions and millions of them in this country. And if we were to ban them, that means that we're disarming millions of people and taking away the most common American, firearm that is, that's in this country. And it's just, something.
Okay. Great, Dan. Thank you so much for calling the Saturday special with a wonderful... Oh, yeah, go ahead, Rebecca. What?
Listen, I just want to say, Dan is right. These are very common weapons. They're all over the place. I want to go back to, more gun regulation isn't going to do anything to stop mental illness. I mean, when you've got a 60% rise in people that want to commit suicide, one of the byproducts of that is that they want to take out other people as they go down. You know, so absolutely. It's the losing the will to live first, and then it's, and so let's get these in the right order. The first thing that happens is you don't want to live anymore. You've got no reason to live, no hope, no inspiration, no lust for life. And that instinct goes awry, and then you go looking for a weapon, and guess what? Lo and behold, these weapons are so common, they're not too hard to find. But we want to blame the weapon. We want to blame the weapon because the other problem is too complicated. We
exactly.
don't know what to do about it. It's messy. Look, the problems we have today, they're messy. But that should not deter us from the truth. You know, look, we may not have the answers, but we have to at least get the questions right.
Yeah, exactly. And can I make one more point before I go?
Sure.
What I've noticed about people that own guns is these are some of the happiest, most well-adjusted, normal people who have, like Rebecca said, a zest for life, who like their life, who want to preserve it, who have a strong sense of self-preservation. What I've noticed about people who are anti-gun is they're generally very unhappy, depressed, you know, sad people that don't have
God.
That same level of self-preservation.
God, you're right on, Dan. I never thought of that.
Yeah, so I mean, I
that's
think
a brilliant observation, and thank you for making it here exclusively on the KSCO Saturday Special.
MZ.
All right, thanks. Have a good one. Now on to Ron in Carmel. Has been waiting 32 minutes and 37 seconds. Hey, Ron, you're on.
Yes,
thanks for waiting.
And I was watching the YouTube video of the LA riots at the Korean stores. And what these fellas had up on the roofs were they had, I saw an M1 rifle, which is a semi-automatic, and a shotgun, and they had pistols. And they were able to defend their store from the riots that took place. But what I was going to start with was the issue regarding the...
I just add one thing here. They didn't actually have to fire those weapons. That's important for people to know. They just stood on those stores with the weapons. They didn't fire into the crowds. And that was enough to discourage people from breaking into their stores. So that's something that we ought to note.
Well, I read an article that said four individuals were in fact shot.
I don't believe that's right, but you might be right. I understood that none of those Korean shop owners fired those weapons.
I also read an article that said that hundreds of rounds were fired into the air by the Koreans before the people to get the attention of the people who thought they were going to break in the shops. But what I was going to bring up early in this discussion, Kay mentioned that the Swiss had weapons, and then Annalise came on and explained what the thoughts were behind that. But my question is, do the Swiss still have those arms? Because if they still have those arms and they're not experiencing the things that we're experiencing, then that's a reason to continue to have the semi-automatic weapons that the Swiss were assigned.
Bingo.
Secondly, Annalise set up a very good argument in listening to her, that the public truly should arm itself under the Second Amendment, because she gave me the scare that the government is so powerful that if the wrong person gets into office, certain individuals will suffer who are against that wrong individual who's in charge of the government.
I think that the Swiss certainly do still have their arms.
They still have the arms.
And let me just read this. It's a short thing. Switzerland issues every household a gun. Switzerland government trains every adult they issue a rifle to.
Mm-hmm.
Switzerland has the lowest gun-related crime rate of any civilized country in the world. So, yes, they still have their guns.
They still do. Okay, so the other thing I was going to bring up was a few years back we used to have an issue called suicide by cop. And that was where people who were mentally ill literally would seek out the police to fire at. Not that they would shoot the police, but that they would get killed by the police. And I don't know if you recall that. That was like about 5 years ago. We had a lot of that going on in the country. And I think, as Rebecca brought up, this thing's now progressed beyond going after the police, going after as many people as possible to take them out before either the individual commits suicide when law enforcement arrives, or they get killed by law enforcement. And then lastly, I just also want to bring up, don't forget there was the Salinas holdup about 2 months ago where a fella, there were two kids who were robbing individuals. There were about six or eight individuals in a restaurant. And as they were robbing these individuals in a restaurant, another guy was coming to meet his friend in that restaurant, saw what was going on. He went back to his car, pulled out his gun, went into the restaurant, killed one of the robbers, and shot the other one. And the other one's going to be on trial here in Monterey County in the next few months. But that individual, because he did have a weapon, was able to save the people in the restaurant. You didn't know what was going to happen with these two guys in the restaurant with the guns that they had drawn on the restaurant customers. So, you know, I'm pro Second Amendment. I don't own a gun, but I am pro Second Amendment. I see the logic behind it.
All right. Well, I believe Rebecca is pro Second Amendment. Am I right, Rebecca?
I am very pro Second Amendment. I am a gun owner. That will probably surprise a lot of people. I am a gun owner. I was trained by my father at an early age not to be afraid of guns and to know how to handle them and clean them. And if I saw someone being attacked, if I saw someone breaking open a gun in a movie theater or on a school ground, I would have no problem shooting that individual. None whatsoever. When you arm a look, there are two things that really have to come together here. And that is, you can't just talk about gun ownership without talking about gun training. Key to what Kay was just reading a few minutes ago is that the Swiss government has taken upon themselves that in realizing that everyone was going to own a weapon, in taking it upon themselves to train each individual in how to properly maintain and handle that weapon. Let's not just assume that, look, most of us go out and we buy a smartphone and we don't know how to use that. Most people who own a gun don't necessarily know how to properly use that gun. Buying one is not the same as knowing how to use a gun safely and how to properly maintain it. So I think the two have to go hand in hand. By the way, I just want to add one more thing. I am a big defender of the Second Amendment. Frankly, I don't think whether, you know, a gun fires a bullet every time you pull the trigger or it fires multiple rounds, I don't think that makes any difference in the world. And I think, like I said earlier, this whole argument is a big ruse and it really makes no sense at all because the real problem is mental illness. But I will say that I am in favor of a longer waiting period before you get your weapon. And here is my reason why, and this is probably going to upset a lot of people. Because mental illness, the best test of mental illness is time. People can hold it together for a week. They can hold it together for 2 weeks, right? But they can't hold it together for a year.
Oh, my God. Are you suggesting a year waiting period?
I am.
Whoa!
I am.
Okay, Rebecca Costa. Yeah. Now, the only reason that the phone isn't jammed up is because it's already jammed.
Okay, so what I want to say is this. What I want to say is this. I am a huge defender of the Second Amendment, and because of that, I want to protect the Second Amendment. And the best protection for the Second Amendment is not to let loons get guns. Because when loons get guns, then the argument against the Second Amendment gets stronger. The only way to preempt that is to have longer waiting periods in which, because look it.
But wait a minute. What about 3 months or 4 months or 6 months? A year?
No, because people can hold it together that long. I will promise you that if a person is mentally disturbed, sometime within a year, there's going to be an incident. The police are going to be called. They're going to be kicked out of school. I don't know, but there could be benchmarks and metrics to measure disqualification to get a weapon. And we need to tighten that up.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, well, I'm going to have to think about that. I'm going to have to give by. That seems a little extreme.
I don't want anyone to be denied a weapon.
Except for a year, maybe. Except for a year.
Yep.
Depending that time to figure out that they deserve to have a weapon that they're
that
they're not nutcases. Hey, listen, we're at the end of the hour. This is we got a whole hour ahead of us. This is KSCO Santa Cruz Salinas Monterey. Stay on the phone if you're there. We promise we'll get to you. KSCO Santa Cruz Salinas Monterey San Jose. It's 11 a.m. Here is CBS News.
CBS News. I'm Pam Coulter. Tourists can only peer through the White House gates today. Tours are canceled, the victim of sequester budget cuts. Meantime, CBS's Peter Mayer says...
The White House is going ahead with plans to suspend the tours, despite Republican criticism and even an online plea from some Waverly, Iowa sixth graders who had to cancel their visit. The White House says sorry, but automatic spending cuts forced the decision.
I'm not suggesting it's a happy choice, but it is one that we had to make.
Spokesman Jay Carney says that choice was based on Secret Service spending options. Peter Mayer, CBS News, The White House.
Shutting down the tour saves an estimated $74,000 a week. At least a dozen homes have been destroyed by a storm surge off the Massachusetts coast. Newberry Building Commissioner Sam Joslin took in the scene on Plum Island.
It's beyond belief. There's no words to express what's happened out here in one storm.
Nelson Mandela is back in the hospital, but officials say there's no cause for alarm. CBS's Sarah Carter in Johannesburg.
Nelson Mandela was admitted to the hospital in the afternoon of South African time on Saturday. The presidential spokesman says this was a scheduled medical checkup. They're doing what he calls routine tests, commensurate with a man of his age. He will be 95 in July.
The former South African president was hospitalized for 18 days in December. Workers are busy trying to get the Sistine Chapel ready for the conclave, set to begin in just 3 days. CBS's Steve Futterman.
On Tuesday, this is where the cardinals will gather to begin electing a new pope. Right now, the Sistine Chapel is being readied for that process. Construction workers are building a wooden walkway for the cardinals as they make their way into the chapel. Special jamming devices have already been placed inside and outside the chapel to prevent any information from leaking out once the conclave begins. Steve Futterman, CBS News, inside the Sistine Chapel at the Vatican.
Is the sky falling? That's what some people are worried about, with an asteroid the size of a city block expected to make its closest approach to Earth later today. Astronomer Bob Berman.
Because they have that faint trace of danger, especially after that February 15th event in Siberia that injured 1,000 people, now suddenly objects passing close to Earth are getting everyone's attention.
No reason for concern. He says the asteroid will miss us by more than twice the distance to the moon. Yankee pitcher Mariano Rivera says he's retiring after this season.
It's not too easy when you come to a decision like this, but I would love to say that it has been a privilege and honor to wear the pinstripes uniform.
He's considered the greatest closer of all time. This is CBS News.
Quietus contains homeopathic ingredients traditionally used to provide relief.
Do you have constant ringing in your ears? Does it drive you crazy? Maybe you hear that buzzing and it drowns out what other people are saying? It's impossible to focus. That ringing is the last thing you hear before you go to sleep. Let me guess. You're hearing that ringing right now. Millions of people suffer from tinnitus, that constant ringing in the ear. Now there's relief. It's called Quietus. Thousands of people have used Quietus to stop ringing in the ear, to stop that hissing sound. You'll love it. You won't have to ask people to repeat themselves. You won't have to sleep with loud fans. Finally, you'll be able to enjoy some peace and quiet. If you're suffering from tinnitus, I urge you to try Quietus.
Call right now for your risk-free trial of Quietus at 1-800-485-4617. That's 1-800-485-4617. Stop the ringing now. 1-800-485-4617. That's 1-800-485-4617.
Gas prices have been sucking a lot of wallets dry, but that may change.
By the first day of spring, gasoline prices will likely fall by 20 to 30 cents a gallon in many markets, the opinion of oil analyst Tom Kloza. And as far as gas prices this summer, he says they'll be very similar to what drivers experienced last summer.
Now, we do have cheaper crude. The U.S. at some point this year will produce more crude than we import, so that'll tend to temper some of the prices.
Kloza says the second half of this year, prices will depend on weather conditions. conditions and what happens in Venezuela. Stephen Kaufman, CBS News.
Star Wars creator George Lucas is looking ahead to his next act. He's offering to build a storytelling museum on federal land in San Francisco. It would be stocked with his vast collection of contemporary paintings, illustrations, and digital art. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth. The offer includes operating what would be called the Lucas Cultural Arts Museum. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
10:11:05 on the Saturday morning, March the 9th. I'm Rick O'Shea on KSCO with a King of the Hill traffic update. Road work in a couple places on Central Coast highways are causing big problems. On Highway 1 northbound, traffic still backed up from Park Avenue into Aptos. For tree trimming, Caltrans has the right lane blocked on Highway 1. Traffic is still slow there. And on Highway 17 northbound in Los Gatos, fence repair taking place. Traffic is at a dead stop on Highway 17 northbound from close to Summit Road, just north of Summit Road, into Los Gatos. Everything picks up north of the 85 connector, but you're going to find very heavy traffic again on Highway 1 northbound in Aptos and Capitola, and on Highway 17 in Los Gatos. Sunny skies in the forecast today, middle to upper 60s, light winds from the southwest between 5 and 10 miles per hour. Before we start hour 2 of the Saturday special, time for the latest from Kay's Whirling.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay Zwirling.
I wrote this story about my mother in 1981, 2 years after her death. I was studying clinical philosophy at that time, a new discipline which was deep, personal, and analytical. And while I was still missing my mom, I thought about her a great deal then. Parents and children have powerful and intimate relationships and perspectives about each other, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, and sometimes neutral. Here I reveal my mother through my own appreciation of being a child, a parent, and a grandparent. I address a philosophical problem, that of finding a sense of groundedness in response to the universal human problem of the abyss, that is, the lack of meaning and aloneness, or nothingness. My mother found her ground in God, and in so many ways now I do too. This is called my mother's ground. She came to America from Greece in 1912 or thereabouts at the age of 16. The fourth in a family of 6 children, quite poor, she had been a young school teacher in her village. Her sister and brother-in-law, living in New York, sent her the money to join them in the land of hope and opportunity. She met and married my father, had 3 children, became a widow at 42. With the 3 of us married or gone soon after, she remained alone in the big house and somehow managed to make the money last. I worried and wondered at her aloneness every night. She would say to me, "God will take care of me. I'm not afraid." God was my mother's ground. An invalid for 6 years and in need of continual custodial care, my 82-year-old mother spent her final years in a local convalescent home. At times she was amazingly alert, other times forgetful, most often strangely peaceful and content. In the early days of her confinement, she would often ask in bewilderment, "¿Por qué el Dios me hizo esto? Why did God do this to me?" Interestingly, after her second stroke, she communicated almost exclusively in Spanish, her native tongue, despite the fact that she had been quite articulate in English. What made it possible for my mother to face each day with valor, even a smile? Her philosophy, which she affirmed each day when we were together, and that was every day. Todo lo que hace Dios es para bien. Everything that God does is for good. God was my mother's ground. In a way, I envied her very much, but I don't believe she ever allowed herself to see the abyss. She chose very early in her life to insulate herself from the anxiety of nihilism by a total and daily commitment to the will of God. What a fascinating and incongruous polarity of personality was my mother, a most gentle, benign imposition of an iron will in the areas concerning her children, and a personal, complete, and total surrender to the will of God. Indeed, God was my mother's ground. For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Well, I'm sure you'd agree that hour number one was spicy, and I think the way things are shaping up, hour number two may be even spicier, so stay with us.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO. Bye.
We have a special guest, Rebecca Costa from the Costa Report on KSCO, with us here today. Rebecca, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. We have phone lines that are totally jammed, and poor Bill in Salinas has been waiting for 46 minutes and 50 seconds. So it's only right to put Bill on the air and welcome him to the Saturday special. Hey, Bill, you're on with Rebecca and MZ. And Ma, are you still there? Are you out signing books? I don't know.
No, I'm still here.
Well, that's a good sign. It's great that you're here, but it's a bad sign that you're not signing books. So I don't know. But
no,
anyhow, Bill, you're on.
It's not bad.
Hello, Mike, Mrs. Orling, and all
Hi.
That.
Hi.
Just called to respond. There's some things that were mentioned by Colonel Terry, and then the next caller kind of said something about it, about how he thought that automatic weapons should be banned. And to repeat the previous caller, fully automatic weapons were originally banned in the U.S. in the 1930s as a response to organized crime during Prohibition because of things like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and drive-by shootings with Tommy guns and stuff like that. Restrictions were made further with the Gun Control Act of 1968. And so as a result, you know, it's so hard to get any legal permits and expensive to get the firearms that it's virtually impossible for the average person to get a fully automatic firearm. So, you know, you basically have to be with Microsoft up in Washington to be able to afford it, you know, with the background checks the ATF does and things like that. So if a person is actually caught with a weapon, an automatic weapon or a machine gun or anything like that, and they don't have the paperwork, that is illegal. They can and should be criminally prosecuted under federal law for that. And depending on the state, maybe the state law too. I'm sure California has some kind of law against it. So if somebody even tries or possesses an automatic weapon without the paperwork from the ATF, it is a crime. They don't have to make any more new laws to make that illegal. It is already a crime. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. So I want to, you know, if the colonel wants to disagree about high-capacity magazines or some semi-automatic weapons, that's fine. That's no problem. But as for the fully automatic firearms, you know, the average ownership of that is already illegal. So, you know, all you have to do is possess an automatic weapon, and the average person can be prosecuted for it under federal law. You know, and so I want to make sure that people understand that.
What's wrong with this picture?
You don't like it.
Oh, well, do you like it? Does any? I know some people like it. I sure don't, but, you know.
Well, personally, I think the federal law, instead of the federal government, instead of going in favor of gun restrictions, we should go along with the Swiss roll, as has already been mentioned on the show, everybody who is a adult, law-abiding adult and all that good stuff, they should be issued weapons as part of the militia, like the Swiss government does. And
they're taught how to use it.
Yeah, I'm perfectly acceptable with that. You know, like, you know, if you're a soldier in the Army teaches you how to use your weapons.
Right.
You know, no problem. You know, but, you know, I mean, if the person has a philosophical prohibition to guns, like the Amish do or someone like that, then fine, they don't get one. But the average person like me or Mr. Zwirling here, Mike, you know, they can take a gun, they can take the training, no problem, and if there's a problem at home, they can legally do something about it. You know?
Yes. Yeah, I'm all for training, just like I'm all for driver training, you know, before you're issued a driving license or permit. So,
sure.
Yeah, anyhow, hey, thank you so much for waiting such a long time, Bill, and I really appreciate that you waited that long because what you had to say added to the program tremendously. Thank you so much. Rebecca Costa, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, now listen here, Rebecca Costa. I just received an email from Dick Landon. True colors of Rebecca Costa. Once again, Rebecca shows her well-veiled true colors. She first states that drugs are the problem. Then she goes for the guns. A year waiting period? Does that infringe on the majority of the citizenry? If it is drugs, why not wait a year for drugs? Well, anyhow, that's what Dick Landon said. I'm not sure I follow all of that, but
let's just take the recent case in Santa Cruz as an example of how that year waiting period would have worked, because waiting to get a weapon isn't the same as diminishing your Second Amendment rights in any way. I'm saying anybody should be able to get a weapon. I just want you to be able to wait a long enough period of time in which if you have any mental illness or criminal tendencies, it's going to come out because people can't hold it together for 12 months. And so given if we accept that, if anybody listening accepts that premise, then let's take the recent case in Santa Cruz. During that 12 months, if you show any tendencies toward violence, any instability whatsoever, as an example, you had repeated calls on domestic violence to a home, that would prolong the waiting period. So if during that period of time there were any incidences, as would be clearly defined, I don't know what those should be. Those should be argued in a court of law. But whatever those benchmarks were, if you violated any of those during that 12-month period, then you'd have to wait another year. And it would go out like that. So if you were mentally ill and the police were constantly coming to your home because you were unstable, you would eventually, it would go out a year, another year, another year, and you would never get it. Now, I know that's a slippery slope, and a lot of people will say, well, then the police will just make up reasons not to, you know, to report you or to come to your home and you won't ever get a gun. I don't think that is what would happen. It could happen. There can always be abuse of things like that, but I'd like to give law enforcement the benefit of the doubt. I'm not one of those people that's big on conspiracies and the government's out to get us.
Okay, good. Well, I think you've made that perfectly clear. It's 17 minutes past 11 on KSCO AM 1080. We are the proud independent station that emanates from Santa Cruz, California, one of the few remaining such a... stations left in the country. Just about everything else I know of is owned by a big corporate media that feeds you the same centrally produced programming and not much innovation. We're proud to originate most of our programming locally. I want to thank our only sponsor of the Saturday special. If you like the Saturday special, what you should do, and you should do this anyhow, even if you don't like the Saturday special, is go to the California Grill, which is a great restaurant. It's an independently owned and operated restaurant that serves mouth-watering, delicious, organic food that is grown on its own farm, Lakeside Organics, which is based in Watsonville and also it's based in the Central Valley. owned by Dick Pichot, and his daughters run the restaurant, which is located at the corner of Airport Boulevard and Freedom Boulevards in the Freedom Shopping Center in Freedom. And it's a wonderful place, and if you don't believe me, just go and try it. And they're open, I believe, from 7:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., 7 days a week. And about a month ago, we took advantage of their wonderful banquet facility that has room for, I think, 50, 60 people. As part of the big health, Super Health Sunday Expo that we put on with Doc Wallach and Ben Fuchs and Corey Gold and so forth. And it's a wonderful restaurant. The food is great. And if you have a special meeting, a business meeting that you want to have, they'll let you use the room if you just buy a few meals and so forth. It's very, very reasonable, and you will be very, very happy that you did. So please visit the California Grill for breakfast, lunch, or dinner anytime between 7:30 a.m. and 8:30 p.m., 7 days a week. And when you go in, thank them for sponsoring the KSCO Saturday special, and tell them MZ sent you. 20 minutes past 11. Back to the phone lines we go. Who's been waiting the longest? My gosh, Ronald in Monterey, 37 minutes. Thank you, Ronald, for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, it's no wait at all. You guys are doing brilliantly. I am one of these people who think that the government is out to get us, and you mentioned other radio talk shows. I wonder if you all know of Joyce Riley and Randy Rhodes.
Sure. Well, I know of both of them, and Joyce actually is associated with us in our longevity business. So,
oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Because these are two talk show women who do, they call it the District of Corruption, D.C.
Yeah.
And they are both against the militarization of police.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about what happened in Santa Cruz or in Aurora, Colorado, or in Connecticut, there's many discrepancies for sure in Colorado and Connecticut from what the police story is and what actually happened. I don't know about exactly the discrepancies in Santa Cruz, but I'm sure people can find it if they want to bring it up. And what I don't like is when they have this big thing in HP Pavilion and police from all over the state come here and they have this giant fest for the death of two police officers. I know we love our police officers, but when a nurse dies, all the nurses don't take off from work and come to celebrate her. When a bus driver dies, all the bus drivers are still driving a bus. They don't take off from their bus driving. And let me tell you this, since the shooting in Santa Cruz, there have been five police shootings in the Bay Area in Sonoma County, Union City, Hayward, San Francisco, and one other place. Just in the last 10 days, there have been five police killings of people that have not been mentioned. So I don't want to continue to exalt the police when there is a very, very good chance that the police are not saints, for one thing, and that they're...
Can I ask you a question?
And wait a minute, Rebecca, you've yelled enough. You've yelled very much. I'm trying to talk calmly and not yell. The military takes over police
department. Now you're yelling, Ronald.
Well, can you tell Rebecca to stop yelling? Let me talk just 1 minute more.
I'm not yelling. I'm just trying to ask a question.
Well, okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Let me just ask a question. Do you have a fan?
Your amps are way up, ma'am. You've been amped up all day, and you've been very loud. I'm saying things calmly.
Do you have a family?
Everybody's my family. I'm one of those hippie types. Everybody's
okay.
One of my family.
Okay. Well, I have a question for you.
Where do you live, Rebecca? I live in Monterey. Where do you live?
What are you talking about?
Are you in Southern California where they have police helicopters flying over all the time?
No, the question I'd like to just ask one question.
Where do you live? You asked me one question.
No, you're asking me a question. You're not letting me ask you a question.
You asked me if I had a family.
You said everybody's your family. You're a hippie type, and you said everyone's your family. So
and we have arguments in our family.
If you saw someone come at some innocent children or... you were at a movie theater and someone opened up weapons. Who would you call?
You don't think like that. You don't constantly prepare for an emergency and then wait, and then think
well,
emergency.
I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you a question. If you happen to be in an unfortunate situation like that,
I go to three movies a week. I go to three movies a week. I'm 62 years old. I've been to hundreds of movies.
Who would you pick up the phone and call? Would you call law enforcement?
Who knows who staged that incident? Maybe law enforcement staged that incident.
But
who do you
call? What would your first instinct be? Wouldn't you want to help those people? Wouldn't you want to protect those people? If you saw children being fired on, you wouldn't pick up the phone and call law enforcement for help?
I would rush the shooter, frankly. But I've been to hundreds of movies in my 62 years. And this has never happened. All of a sudden, it's happening all over the place. And conveniently, now we need more federal control.
The problem I have, this is the only problem, and I'm not going to yell and scream anymore. I got pretty worked up during the first hour.
Yes.
This is the problem I have. The problem I have is everybody that comes down on law enforcement and doesn't want to honor them, whenever they get in trouble, the first call they make is to law enforcement. They want
it should be peacekeeping. It shouldn't be law enforcement. It should be peacekeeping. Peace officers. You can enforce any law you want. And do you know that war is legal? So law enforcement, that means war enforcement. Law, war is legal. So law enforcement
It's very hard to keep the peace when someone's got a weapon and they're firing it.
Police have weapons. Police have weapons.
Listen, you've obviously not been in a war zone. I have been.
I was in Bangkok, Thailand, in the Vietnam War. What war were you in?
That wasn't in
the war. I was in Vinh Chin, Laos. That was involved in the war. And let me tell you.
Well, you must be CIA.
My dad was in the CIA. You're correct.
See? So I'm against the CIA. I'm against secret operations, which are like arsonists that cause all the trouble, and then regular grunts have to come in, and clerks like myself have to come in and clean up messes by the CIA arsonists.
But before we go after the government, before we accuse the military...
We are the government.
Before we go after law enforcement, everybody should take this simple litmus test. If you saw innocent civilians being killed, who would you pick up the phone and call?
I see them killed in Pakistan. I see them killed in Yemen.
God, Ronald, answer her question. It's so simple.
Michael, I see innocent civilians killed overseas now. Just because they're not Americans doesn't mean they're not innocent. I see them killed by drones.
My question. Look, you don't want to answer my question because it's inconvenient.
I answered it.
You don't want to answer the question.
Are you going to call the authority? Are you going to call the law enforcement?
Michael,
Ronald?
I'm going to rush.
Yes or no?
I'm going to rush them. Michael, I think I'm like you. I rush people. If they're shooting, I'm the person who would rush them myself, you know.
But you're not going to call them.
Right,
I would call them and rush them, okay? But you wouldn't even call them, huh?
No, you'd rush first. And I carry books around. I'd probably throw a book at their head. I carry books, hardcover books. So maybe I'd throw a book at their head.
Bullets are a little more efficient, I think. Anyhow, Ronald, thank you very much for calling the Saturday special, Dondi and Freedom. Dondi, about freedom. Go ahead.
Yeah. thank you for having this discussion. It's a very critical, very complex discussion. And I like how I'm hearing varying opinions and facts, and as I try to sort out my own thoughts on this topic, Freedom Forum is sponsoring an event on this topic on March 20th. It's a Wednesday night, 7 p.m., and we are going to show a couple films, and then our big surprise is Ben Fuchs is going to talk to us live over Skype.
Wow!
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Oh, that's great.
And he's going to offer his expert insight. I would like to also invite Rebecca, because I didn't realize she had so many interesting ideas on this.
Yeah, you got to listen to the Costa Report at from 2 to 4 p.m. Fridays, live on our station. So
I've caught it several times.
Uh-huh.
I like the diversity, and this is what we're looking for at Freedom Forum, to be able to have respectful and interesting discussions. And after Ben Fuchs is done talking with us, we will have an open mic. So I would like to invite the audience to come. It's at Live Oak, and Live Oak is on 1900 17th Avenue in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, Live Oak Grange,
Live
right.
Grange.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's free. We do accept donations, and the doors open at 6:30 if people want to just mix and talk to other people in the audience.
And that's typically like the third Wednesday of the month, yes?
Yes, yes,
that
it is.
That you do a Freedom Forum. Great.
Hey, and Donnie, the title of this one is, What's All This Gun Talk About?
Okay.
And thank you for your radio station. It's heaven sent.
Well, thanks for what you do, too. Thank you so much. Here goes here's Terry in Capitola. Welcome to the Saturday special.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, Terry. Oh, hey, it's warm board, Terry. How are you?
That's the one. Can you hear me?
Hear you fine, yeah.
All right. Hey, the 2 points. Number one is, and I don't want to make light of the death of the children in Newtown. I'm sure that for their parents it was a personal tragedy, for their friends and family it's a tragedy. However, I will make light of it now. We make too big a thing of these things. It was 22 children. Probably that number of kids died of SIDS that weekend, and those parents were similarly traumatized and felt it was tragic as well. They say in the law that hard cases make bad law. And so when you have these emotionally overwrought cases that end up becoming national news and are played on the 24-hour news cycle for day after day after day, people start thinking, wow, we have this huge problem that needs to be addressed. In fact, gun crime is down 50% in the last two decades. Down, not up. It's not increasing, it's decreasing. I'm not sure we have a problem. That's point number one. Point number two is why we have a Second Amendment, and this is something you and I have discussed in the past, but it's all about American exceptionalism. And what is exceptional about the United States is, throughout the rest of the world, the countries are ruled by a sovereign of some sort, whether it's a king or a queen or a parliament or whatever, but it's top-down rule of the citizens. In England, citizens are called subjects. They are subject to rule. But in the United States, the individual is sovereign. That's what's unique about this country. And so when they wrote the Bill of Rights, that's what it was all about. It was about the sovereignty of the individual over their own lives. And as other people have pointed out, if you're in a crowded theater, or for that matter, if you're in your home, and intruders bust into your door, what are you going to do? Call 911 and wait 20 minutes for a response? No, you need to have the right to defend yourself. Now, this right to defend yourself, the ultimate right for the responsibility of defending your own life, extends not only to intruders into your home. It includes the government and all other forms of intrusion. Sooner or later, in this country, and it's what's unique about this country, you have the right to protect your own life. As has been said, God made man, and Sam Colt made them equal. And when you have a gun in your hand, and an intruder enters your house with a gun, guess what? You're equal. It doesn't matter whether he's bigger or smaller than you. And that guy that says you can throw books at people to try and defend yourself, I mean, it's like beyond ridiculous. But in any case, that's the reason why we have a Second Amendment, and that has never changed and hopefully will never change in this country.
I'm so happy you called in, Warm Board, Terry. Hey, here's a Rebecca Costa comment via KSCO.com from Jana. It says, I really love Rebecca. She makes so much sense. I don't always agree with her. However, today she is spot on regarding these mental illness issues and how the doctors are so fast in giving medication instead of offering solutions. I think she is a Democrat. If so, she is my favorite Democrat. Keep up the good work. I agree with Michael on the Second Amendment. Okay, thank you, Jana. By the way, you can email me directly, mz@ksco.com. That particular email came through ksco.com, the website. You can email me directly at mz@ksco.com. If you want to call the show, we finally have some lines open at 479-1080. That's in area 831. Poor Thomas in Santa Cruz has been waiting 21 minutes and 55 seconds, but the wait is now over. Thomas, welcome to the Saturday special with Rebecca and MZ, and I think Kay.
Thank you, Michael, Kay, and Rebecca. And that wasn't a very long wait, shorter than last week. But a point, I really like what I'm hearing Rebecca say today about the underlying cause of all these issues. And I have a question for her, and that is, has she ever read a book called Topsoil and Civilization?
Any other recommendations?
No, I'm sorry, I haven't. I'm not familiar with that.
Well, a quick recount of what the theme of the book is that It is a book that was written, and they studied civilizations throughout centuries, and the short conclusion was the reason that all of the civilizations fell was because people abused the soil, which eventually led to a reduction in the quality of the food supply, which eventually led to a reduction in the quality of brain function. And that, to me, it goes right along with the theme that you brought up in today of the underlying problem that we are really suffering, and all the other ones are just symptoms.
Well, whatever's happening is happening on a species-wide basis, because we're seeing the will to live disintegrate in front of our eyes. When you have a 60% increase in suicide rates over a few decades, you know, that's enough to tell us something's going on. Not only that, we have a massively depressed group of children on our hands right now. And, you know, trying to get to the cause of that is going to be difficult, because, like so many things, I think the cause is multifactorial. I think it's things like not spending time in nature, not having time with their parents, you know, not feeling connected to society. You know, whatever it is, these children don't have hope. They don't have zest. They don't have love for life. And they're not inspired. And, you know, I argue in my USA Today article that we're dealing with a substantially different kind of killer right now, and it's just simply a byproduct of a very depressed and unhappy society. More and more of us are losing our will to live. That is a very difficult problem for us to understand and to try to fix. But we must each, in our own lives, come to terms with that. And in my view, one of the things that we know about each of these killers, by the way, is that they signal their depression very early on. Every person around them says, yeah, they were kind of depressed, they were moody. They're even posting their intentions on Facebook and social media. So, you know, we're getting a lot of signs. And what's even more disturbing is that we've become so accustomed to it that we just sort of are ignoring it. As a society, we go, yeah, well, lots of people post suicidal things and stupid things on Facebook. I mean, what kind of a world do we live in where that bar has been set so low that we just accept that? You know, I don't know. Boy, I'll tell you what, my kids, they were on social media, and I was monitoring it. And if I would have seen some disturbing posts, I would have been all over it, just as a parent.
Well, you know, I heartily agree with what you just said. There's multifaceted reasons. I think that the nutrition aspect is a very large aspect, but I think there are many other aspects, as you just said. You know, one of the aspects that really sticks for me is that we have a government that lies to us. And how healthy is that psychologically for the whole population, from children through adults my age of 52? It's not healthy psychologically for us to know that our government lies to us. You agree with that?
That's right. I do agree with that. What saddens me the most is a lot of times I'll ask adults our age, you know, I'll say, who do you really admire? Who do you really respect? Who do you think is a great role model? And they stop for a moment, and they have to think for several minutes, and you can see them running through every person they know in government, in their church, and their, you know, I mean, they're really searching. And I would encourage everybody to do this. It's a problem when you don't have role models, when you don't feel that you can name 20 people that are working for the higher good, that are public in public service. I mean, who are our heroes? Who are our role models now? When we live in a society where we can't name who those are, we're troubled. And most people will surprisingly name people who are dead. They'll name Theodore Roosevelt, or they'll name John Kennedy, and I go, no, that's not help. That's not really helpful today. Name someone today.
Yeah. Well, I feel blessed. I have one. I can answer that question. Not that I need to, but I do have a role model, and I agree. It's a very important and relevant question. It speaks to what I said. Our psychological health is there's many reasons for that also besides diet, and I kind of lost my track, but I agree with what you said.
Yeah, back to what your main point was is, yes, nutrition is absolutely going to factor into that, because we know that the foods we're eating have half the nutrients that they had just 10 years ago. So there's no question that when the body is starving, the brain is starving too, and that has an effect on our biochemistry. We're not going to be able to get away from that. But as you point out, it's going to be a lot of factors that are contributing to losing this will to live, and I think that's why that article in USA Today stirred up so much controversy.
Hey, Thomas, I think
that the conversation that you brought up, the points you brought up, Rebecca, deserve a lot more time and thoughtful conversation and explanation.
What happened to Thomas?
I'm still here.
Thank you, Thomas, for your call.
Yeah, I appreciate your call to the Saturday special at 479-1080. That was Thomas in Santa Cruz. Before we go to Craig in Boulder Creek and Richard N. Watsonville and Jan and Slv and John and Carmel, I want to read bits of this email that I received from Bob. More women and children killed by the Brady Bill. There's a number of these. I think I'll just read two or three of the short ones here. This is the reality of the Brady Bill. Bonnie El-Masri. On March 5th, 1991, Bonnie El-Masri called a firearms instructor worried about her husband, who was subject to a restraining order to stay away from her, had been threatening her and her children. When she asked the instructor about getting a handgun, the instructor explained that Wisconsin has a 48-hour waiting period. Ms. El-Masri and her two children were murdered by her husband 24 hours later. Okay, what a difference a day makes. In 1985 in San Leandro, California, a woman and her daughter were threatened by a neighbor. Instead of being able immediately to obtain a handgun for self-defense, the woman had to wait 15 days. The day after she finally was allowed to pick up her gun, the neighbor attacked them, and she shot him in self-defense. The man attacked 14 rather than 16 days after his initial threat. Had the man attacked 14 rather than 16 days after his initial threat, the woman and her daughter might have been raped. Let's see. Catherine Latta. In September 1990, a mail carrier named Catherine Latta of Charlotte, North Carolina, went to the police to obtain permission to buy a handgun. Her ex-boyfriend had previously robbed her, assaulting her several times, and raped her. The clerk at the sheriff's office informed her the gun permit would take 2 to 4 weeks. I told her I'd be dead by then, Miss Latta later recalled. That afternoon, she went to a bad part of town and bought an illegal $20 semi-automatic pistol on the street. 5 hours later, her ex-boyfriend attacked her outside her house, and she shot him dead. The county prosecutor decided not to prosecute Miss Latta for either the self-defense homicide or the illegal gun. There's a whole lot of these things that Bob and Carmel... Yeah, please, because I thought you'd want to.
I do want to comment on that. There are many cases in which people have, put in gun applications and they were in waiting and they lost their lives or they were attacked. In my view, that is a failure on the part of law enforcement. That's not a failure on the gun waiting period of time. So I think it makes it sound as though the way that the stories are prepared and they're delivered, it makes it sound as though because they had to wait, they died or they were attacked. But in fact, those people went to law enforcement and made it very clear that they were under threat and they should have been protected by law enforcement. And there were other ways that they could have been protected. So that to me is a failure of law enforcement. If I report I'm under threat, then I should have additional protections available to me. They should be driving by my house. And in fact, I would like to make the point that I have been threatened. Ever since I've been on the air, I've been threatened, and I'm regularly threatened. And because of that, if I do get a threat that I think is valid and has some energy behind it, I notify the local sheriff or police department, and they do drive-bys by my house. So you know what? I'm very grateful to them for that. I mean, they're proactive. They don't want anything to happen to me, particularly when I report it. So I want to make it clear that in those cases, I believe it was a failure on the part of law enforcement, not the waiting period.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Craig in Boulder Creek, welcome to the Saturday special with Rebecca and MZ and K, I think.
Hi, Michael. Yeah, I agree. I like Rebecca and I agree with her a lot, but on this one I disagree with her. We have hundreds of thousands of cases used each year of people who use guns. Well, they don't actually have to use them. They just threaten somebody with them when they break into their houses and things. And if they didn't have those, they wouldn't be able to do it. And I don't think there's any more reason to wait a year for getting a gun than there is to wait a year or more to get a car, since going down and buying an assault vehicle is a very dangerous thing, and more dangerous than going down and getting a gun, because they kill more people than guns do.
Right. Okay. All right.
And so the waiting period in there is too long in a lot of cases, and a year is grossly excessive. And
I want to ask her, but don't mean to interrupt, but I'll forget if I don't. Rebecca, I was going to ask you this before. What is something? What is magical about 365 days? I mean, 364 days isn't enough, but 365 days is for your waiting period.
Well, there's nothing magical about that. I mean, I'm not a mental health expert. I'm not a psychiatrist. Maybe they'll say 9 months is enough. Maybe they'll say a year isn't long enough. I don't really know. I used a year arbitrarily. I'm not stuck on a year. I just feel that the waiting period should be longer. And the reason I address this is because if someone is mentally unstable, there's going to be some incidences that occur during that year that would indicate it. They're going to show their hand. Now let me make this one point, because I do want to address what Craig had to say. As far as I'm concerned, because I am a defender of the Second Amendment, I believe it is an important amendment and it needs to be defended, particularly at this time. So let me just say this. For a healthy, normal, responsible adult, having to wait 1 minute, right, to get a gun permit, to get a weapon, is too long. For an unstable person, we need to have a longer period of time. And the trouble is, we can't tell who is the responsible, healthy adult and who is not the responsible, healthy adult. We just can't tell. What I offer to people that are listening today is that time is how we tell. Because over time, unstable people show that they engage in unstable behavior. And that's how we're going to tell. We're not going to tell by judging whether you have a college degree or you have enough money to buy a weapon.
Rebecca, I don't see denying thousands of people the right to keep a gun and protect themselves is to weed out one person is a good balance.
Oh, hold on. I'm not denying anybody. I've never denied.
Yes, you are. You said a year. The healthy person has to wait a year along with the unhealthy person.
How is that denying?
It is, because they don't get to get it for a year. That is denying them for a year. They have to be unprotected while they wait for a possible nutcase somewhere in the United States who's going to probably illegally get a gun and use it.
Let me give you this. It's an imperfect system. My solution is imperfect. I realize that. Let me be the first to say that. It's not a perfect system. I just happen to believe that, particularly in the case in Santa Cruz, if we'd had that waiting period and this fellow would have had to wait a year before he could get a gun, that we might not have had the tragedy that we had.
He had three botched cases that he had been convicted of that any one of them should have had him in jail for that whole time and not allowed to do that, but he got plea bargained down to where he I still can't figure out how, after reading what he'd gone through, how he managed to get that. I mean, it seems like there's an impossibility, a gross incompetency in government to keep him or allow him to have a gun, considering all the things he'd already done.
That's right. But imagine if he had applied for a permit and one of the criteria had been, well, you've plea bargained out of a violent case, or you're under a case right now for domestic violence, and so we can't approve your permit. Imagine if those had been, firewalls to allowing him to get a weapon.
Yes, and what about all that? You still are going on that year, or you say you might go for less than that, like 6 months.
Well, I'm not a mental
How about all the people whose lives can't be protected because they can't go down and get one because there is an occasional nutcase out there. It's like saying you can't sell a car to anybody because there might be one of them might turn out to be a drunk driver.
I can't argue with your logic there. And again, I'm not a mental health expert, so I can't say whether it's a year, 9 months, 6 months. I do know. Look, let me give a different example. Have you ever been, I don't know, have you been married a long time or have you been dating? Have you ever been out in the dating world?
Yes.
Okay, so when you go out and you date someone, they put their best foot forward, you know, the first time you get together, nice, wonderful, romantic dinner.
Well, theoretically, they should. They don't always.
Right. So the first few months, it's a lot of fun. It's like the honeymoon period. Everybody's on their best behavior. But I promise you, somewhere around 9 months to 12 months down the road, and this
yeah,
is
well, you, by the time you get ready to get engaged, people change.
Yeah, they start changing and they start showing their true colors. They leave their clothes on the floor. Maybe they leave the toilet seat up. I'm speaking as a woman. I mean, sooner or later, people gravitate to their natural state. You know, it's what physicists call their steady state. Human beings have a steady state, too, just like atoms do. And in reality, all of us can put on whatever airs we want, maybe to get the permit or maybe to get a girl or a guy to like us. But eventually we go to our steady state. And if our steady state happens to be we're a lunatic, we need to have some way to vet that out.
That's exactly right.
We need to be able to vet that out. And believe
now, who
me,
can argue with that? But I think 6 months is plenty of time. I think 3 months is plenty of time. You probably don't agree with that.
Let's let the mental health people decide what the time period ought to be. But let me just make this point. Look, if we keep the time period too short and more lunatics get a hold of guns and shoot up people, and the Second Amendment is going to be under more threat, not less threat.
How about the people who need the gun permit to get their gun to protect their lives, and while you're weeding out this one case in 10,000, all these other people, well, not all of them, but some of them are going to die because you did that weeding out.
Well, as I say, there may be some incidences of that. I believe they will be minor. And as I said earlier, I believe that's a problem for law enforcement. When I've been threatened and I've been worried about my own safety, I've reported it to law enforcement, and I found them to be tremendously responsive.
Well, together with the fact that you've been packing heat all these years. So anyhow, all of that together adds up to a feeling comfortable. Craig in Boulder Creek, thank you for your call to the Saturday special. We're gonna. Okay. I was just gonna move on to Andrea who called and she hung up because she was somebody who changed her mind on this whole thing. So maybe she'll call back. Andrea wants you to call back to the secret line here, and so that you can get through. If you call the regular line, you'll get through here, 479-1080. Craig, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it, and you call again. Who's next? That would be Richard N. Watsonville. Richard, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. One of these days we're going to be able to go to the motor vehicle departments and get our concealed weapons permit and register our weapons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like voting, just like jury duty, just like registering to vote, I think it's going to go to the motor vehicle department and let them deal with it, because obviously the cops cannot deal with it. And Rebecca's whole solution of mental retardation... The guy in Santa Cruz was a Hawkeye or a Black Hawk helicopter pilot. The guy in Los Angeles was a former cop, decided to turn into a good cop and turn his buddies in. I don't call that a sign of mental retardation there, Rebecca.
I didn't say mental retardation. I said mental illness.
Same thing. You don't give a Black Hawk helicopter pilot a license to do what he was doing if he's got any sign of being edgy.
Mental illness has nothing to do with your occupation.
Well, it obviously does if you're a cop.
No, it doesn't have anything to do with your occupation. You can be mentally ill and be a psychiatrist.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it doesn't have anything to
do
with
it. In fact, you're more likely to be mentally ill if you're a psychiatrist.
Or a cop. Or even a policeman. Because I'll tell you what, neither one of these...
There. I,
why not? You might as well go there, Rebecca. What the hell?
In every one of these cases where we've had a mass shooting, which is essentially what's triggered the debate on the Second Amendment, right?
It has not triggered that debate at all. I called up to say a couple of things that had absolutely nothing to do with the Second Amendment. The first thing was Santa Cruz is not set up for what happened last week. That's why the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department had to take over for the Santa Cruz City Department. And the second thing was, we do not have a channel black out there, clowns. When they started this whole thing last week, everybody get on channel black. Old Val Collins, or Connors, gets on there, she's the dispatcher, says, we don't have a channel black. We could put you on channel red or channel yellow. Then he overrides her. He says, I want everybody on channel black. I want...
Jesus, Richard, you're way over everybody's heads on this, you know?
This is when it all unfolded last week, and these are lessons to be learned, and that's what we should be talking about, not listening to Rebecca Costa telling us about mental retardation, mental illness, kids taking pills or drugs to relieve their depression or whatever it is. Don't forget the cops kids are taking the same medicine, Rebecca. The cops kids.
Mental retardation and mental illness are not the same thing. Mental illness has nothing to do with whatever job you have.
You can be mentally ill and not retarded. That's the point here. Hey, Andrea's called back, and I'm very, very excited to get Andrea on. So let's get Andrea on. Andrea,
hi.
Welcome to the Saturday Special. You're on the air with Rebecca Costa and MZ.
Thank you so much. You know, I just wanted to say that people like you actually persuaded me that to look at your point of view and see what you're saying, and I've changed my opinion on this whole topic. I used to be a card-carrying gun control advocate, and I now fully see why you've been telling us what you've been telling us all these years. The government is people, and they wear the uniforms of government, but why give our power to these people and our safety? And you look at so many instances throughout history where people have done that and paid a high price for it. So, thanks.
Wow.
I want people like me to just consider, just think about what these people are trying to tell us about gun control.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your call in. This is the number one call for you, and I hope there are many other calls.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that call very much, because I think that these kinds of open conversations do change people's minds, and sometimes they reinforce what we think, but it's really important to be able to have open dialogue like this. I really appreciate the opportunity, Michael.
Ditto. Yeah, thanks to both of you. Thank you, Andrea. Our next caller is going to be Jan in San Lorenzo Valley. Jan, you're on the air with Rebecca at MZ.
Hi, thank you very much. I wanted to say that, Rebecca, I agree with you on a lot of things, but I don't agree with you on this waiting period. I think you're attacking the wrong end of it. Instead of taking away the rights of the legal citizens, we need to take away the criminals, the criminal element. We need, there's no waiting period for the criminals. And by putting this huge waiting period on the legal citizens, a lot of them are going to become criminals because they're going to go find a gun or something, And I want to say that Alan Gura, a very famous current attorney who has fought a lot of these federal cases, has come out and said that, remember, it's a bill of rights, not a bill of wrongs.
Yeah,
very good, yeah.
Yeah, I understand that any obstacle that we put down which prevents a healthy individual from being able to get a weapon is an advantage to the criminal factor. I do understand that. And look, there are no perfect solutions. I said this earlier and I'll repeat it. There are no perfect solutions. But I do believe that if we know that there's a trend right now where mental illness is increasing and people are losing the desire to live, and many of those people are deciding that before they die, they're going to take others with them. If we know that society is trending in that direction, then if we allow more and more mentally ill people to have access to weapons, I would argue that it's going to be very difficult to defend the Second Amendment.
Well, we need to step in and make sure that we get the background checks done correctly.
Okay, listen, I realize that it's 11:58 and 27 seconds here. I want to thank you, Jan, because we got it. John and Carmel has been waiting here. We want to put John on. You're on, John. Sorry you don't have much time, but take it.
Okay, Rebecca, let's say I'm watching you getting raped and I've got my AR-15 next to it. Would you like me to call the police or use the weapon?
Use the weapon, please.
There you go. And I wish you were as strong about abortion as you are about this deal with the weapons. You know, you're just trying to take rights away from men, and men are the ones that usually have weapons. And the other thing, you keep touting about being over in Southeast Asia. You were a little girl. You didn't even do anything over there except live with your family. You know, it's kind of disrespectful to us Vietnam guys that you make the assumption that you know what was going on there. So there you go. So, again, stand up. If I had the AR-15, I would protect you. Police might take 30 to 40 minutes to get there, and that's why this rule is there.
All right, John, thank you for being the last caller on a great Saturday special. Thank you, Rebecca, for being a fabulous guest, as you always are. You're a great host, too. Ma, hope, I don't know whether you're still in the studio, but if you're not, you're out signing books. Hope you have a good time. That's it, gang. Program will be rebroadcast tonight and on demand at KSCO.com.
That's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose, 12 noon. Here is CBS News.
CBS News, I'm Pam Coulter. Message delivered but shrugged off. A suicide bombing outside the Afghan defense ministry in Kabul was apparently timed to coincide with the visit of Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel to the country. CBS's Cammie McCormick with more.
Defense Secretary Hagel traveled to Jalalabad to meet with troops there.
First, let me thank each of you for your service and what you're doing here.
He told reporters he wasn't sure at first what had happened in Kabul when the attack began, but he said he wasn't surprised.
We're in a war zone. I've been in war. So I shouldn't be surprised when a bomb goes off or there's an explosion.
The Taliban said in a statement the attack was a message to Hagel. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Washington.
The Kabul blast and a second attack in Khost in eastern Afghanistan claimed at least 19 lives, including 8 children. There are reports that security forces have abandoned their posts at the Egyptian Museum amid continuing clashes and a widening police strike in Cairo. A 3-day ordeal is over for some UN peacekeepers. The 20 Filipino peacekeepers were freed by Syrian rebels and safely arrived in Jordan today. Their abduction is raising concerns about the future of UN operations in the region. 94-year-old Nelson Mandela has been readmitted to a hospital for what officials say is only a routine test. Mandela was hospitalized for over 2 weeks in December, battling an infection. Preparations are underway at the Vatican for next week's conclave to choose a new head of the world's 1 billion Catholics.
I'm Vicki Barker at the Vatican. Earlier today, workmen wearing safety gear carefully erected a tall metal chimney stack on the roof of the Sistine Chapel. Once that papal conclave begins on Tuesday, all eyes will be watching that chimney for the white smoke that signifies that the world's 1.2 billion Roman Catholics have a new pope.
If your bucket list includes a White House tour, you're out of luck, at least for now. Tours have fallen victim to the sequester budget cuts. Tulsa fifth grader Rachel Gurley is going on a field trip to the nation's capital.
I know it's really upsetting, and of course I'm really furious, but we gotta learn how to just roll with the punches and have fun, even though that's not going to be in our trip.
In his weekly address, President Obama expressed hope for a resolution to the impasse.
I still believe that compromise is possible. I still believe we can come together to do big things. And I know there are leaders on the other side of the aisle who share that belief.
Republicans say more tax hikes are off the table for a deficit-cutting deal. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions.
We need to grow the economy, not the government.
And daylight saving time arrives at 2 a.m. Sunday, so it's a good idea to turn the clocks ahead before turning in. This is CBS News.
Did you know that certain gold and silver coins can be added to your retirement accounts?
It's a fact. For years, investors have been adding popular coins like the gold and silver American Eagles to their IRAs and old 401ks. More importantly, gold and silver have quadrupled in value within the past 10 years. Major banks and credible analysts around the world are forecasting even more demand for both gold and silver in the coming years. Isn't it about time for you to consider adding gold to your retirement accounts? When it comes to adding physical metals to your retirement accounts, no one makes it easier and faster than American Bullion. Call now for your free gold guide at 800-664-8864. Find out how to add U.S. minted gold and silver coins to your IRA and old 401k. Call the most trusted name in the industry today, American Bullion. 800-664-8864. Call for your free gold guide. 800-664-8864.
12:04 on this Saturday afternoon, the 9th of March. You're listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, online at KSCO.com. I'm Rick O'Shea with a King of the Hill traffic update. Major problems right now on Highway 17 northbound. Scheduled road work currently taking place at the reservoir and in Los Gatos. Electrical work and fence repair has one lane closed of Highway 17 in both directions. Northbound 17 is backed up all the way to Summit Road. It's going to take roughly an hour to an hour and a half to get over to San Jose from Santa Cruz. Again, scheduled road work at the reservoir and Los Gatos. One lane closed in both directions of Highway 17. Northbound traffic backed up from Summit. It's going to take between an hour and an hour and a half to get into San Jose from Santa Cruz. On 101 northbound in Gilroy and Morgan Hill, traffic is just below the limit at the Tennant Avenue area. Forecast today, plenty of sun. Highs are going to be in the middle to upper 60s. 12:05 at KSCO, time for Perspectives.
Good afternoon. You've tuned in to the Perspectives Radio Show. My name is Donald Davidson. I'm your host, and joining me shortly will be our regular guest host every second and third Saturday of the month, Dr. David Biles. And our very special guest, who is already with us, is Dr. David Kennedy. Dr. Kennedy, thanks for joining us today. Dr. Kennedy?
Yes, I'm happy to be.